The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, I don't know if it's just me that does this, but have you ever noticed that the longer you know an animal, the more formally you address them? Like...
Okay, so the answer is yes. That has happened in every instance of my pet ownership.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, what's the most formal title that you call one of your cats? No.
Okay, so... All of the boys, except for Norm, have ended up with Mr. So Shrummy at one point became Mr. Boots because I called it his alter ego when he was mad at physical therapy. Uh-huh. And then Petey has become Mr. Poop Magoo.
I have gotten with my husband's dog, Luca, which is now, I guess, my dog, married into the dog. I now call him Sir. Or, like, I refer to him as, like, a spectacular gentleman. Or, like, oh, it is a wonderful gentleman that has arrived.
I like, love it. And don't you feel like he knows it? Like, that you are really honoring him?
Yes. Oh, I think he has an awareness of the fact that I'm now using formal titles to address him as though he's a member of, like, a royal family. There's got to be, I'm sure that that somewhere there is some grad student studying psychology who is studying this phenomenon about how the longer you know something or the more familiar you are with it, the more ridiculous you get with nicknaming. And I would love to hear why everyone does this.
What do you think it is? It's like Midge, started out as Midge, named after Mrs. Maisel. And now she's Baba Omijo. She's like, I mean, she's got all of like Baba O'Reilly. Do you know what I mean? I start singing yes. Teenage Wasteland. And it's like, Baba Omijo, Miss Bubba Baby. I mean, it's like every crazy. And you know what I do? When the animal unfortunately eventually passes away, I put all the nicknames on the urn because they should be known. They should be remembered as they were.
You have to. You definitely have to do that. I mean, if any listeners know, we would love to hear why.
We want to hear all about
why are we doing this?
Why did Shrummy ever become Porchetta Monkey Butt?
Great question. This week, Molly Hayward, Julissa Arce, and Megan Gailey join us to tackle the following questions. Do Republicans read anything that they weren't assigned in 10th grade? How do we unfuck the feminine care industry? Who decides when we're dressing appropriately? And finally, can Mayor of Easttown solve the mystery of Pennsylvania's wacky accents? All this and more right now. Okay, let's get started with the news this week. There's a lot of things that are going on, the kind of sword fighting about the January 6th commission that the Democrats already negotiated with Republicans on, and now Republicans that are like, let's negotiate on this. I say they should just be like, fuck it, we're going to do it our way that we can already do it. We're in charge of
fuck
Congress.
It. Fuck it.
Yeah.
Do look, it. You can you do guys, it, so do it.
Right. I feel like the Democrats really need to lean in to any disciplinarian matronliness that they have and be like, you can't play with it, I'm taking it away. Now we're playing by my rules.
Couldn't agree more. They have to realize this shit's not on the level. Stop playing like it's on the level. Like the Republicans are going to like negotiate in good faith. It's not on the fucking level.
Yeah, it's tiresome is what it is. It's just fucking tiresome.
Filling my days with legislative ennui.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Like, do a thing. I think every American wants to know what happened January 6th. But I think most Americans who don't work in anything that intersects with politics have other things they're worried about. And those other things cannot be eclipsed by this dumb sword fight. Like, we right. will, one way or another, do this investigation with the Republicans' help, without the Republicans' help. We're going to do it. I think it's just sucking so much oxygen out of the room. I want them to do infrastructure. Fucking do infrastructure.
Do it.
People need that. Okay, speaking of infrastructure, schools and how they have failed current Republican elected officials. Okay, so I don't like to joke about failing schools because I have so many teachers in my family. Everyone knows that we fucking love teachers on this show.
They do. And this may be more about failing individuals than failing schools.
100% failing individuals, willfully failing individuals. I'm just going to read through a few people who didn't quite seem to take the right lessons from what they were supposed to be learning. So Rand Paul, who is a doctor for eyes, he's not an epidemiologist. He is an eyeball doctor. He is an eyeglasses man. He is not getting the vaccine because he says he has natural immunity because he has COVID, which it hasn't been established that having COVID gives a person natural immunity to every strain of COVID. And it has been established that the vaccine can give people an immunity to multiple strains of concern of COVID. I didn't go to medical school. I didn't even take science classes in college. And even I know this. Like, if you're one of Rand Paul's patients, I would find a new eye doctor.
There's not one medical expert who agrees with his assessment.
No, not a single one. And here's another thing that I don't understand. I tweeted something to this effect, but there is a growing body of evidence that suggests that men who have COVID-19 are much more likely to experience erectile dysfunction as a result of having COVID-19. So, like, you know, I understand that erectile dysfunction is a serious issue for a lot of people, but I also want to say that if you are a dumbass who went out and put yourself at risk and you find yourself getting COVID, don't brag about that shit, because underneath that, I'm going to be wondering about your dick. And I don't want to. I don't want to think about it, Rand. Just get the fucking vaccine. Okay. But instead of, you know, getting the vaccine or educating himself, he has spent his time this week trying to get a tweet from singer Richard Marx taken down from Twitter. Did you see this, Alyssa?
No.
Oh, my God.
No, I missed this.
Okay, so Richard Marx, 80s prom maker extraordinaire.
Slow dance it out. Just slow dance it out.
Yes. Richard Marx tweeted something that expressed admiration for Rand Paul's neighbor. Now, Rand Paul's neighbor famously beat Rand Paul up at one point. Richard Marx said that he would like to buy that neighbor a drink. So first of all, that's not even an original joke. People joke around about thinking that neighbor was cool
all the time. Since it happened.
All the time. People make a different version of that joke. Richard Marx was probably just the first celebrity that Rand Paul knew to make that joke. And he was like, hey, so that's how he's using his energy this week. Yeah.
Wait, Erin, can you imagine the man who sang the song, wherever you are, whatever you do, I will be right here waiting for you. That he has been driven to say, I want to buy the man who decked Rand Paul in the face a drink. I think that's hilarious. And yes, that was Cartman singing Richard Marx.
I could read that Cartman impression through. I would watch an entire episode of South Park that just was a musical featuring Cartman, to be honest.
Singing songs about Rand Paul.
Oh, yeah, totally. Look, I don't think that we should encourage people to beat other people up, but Richard Marx's joke wasn't even original. And, like, there are other things to worry about Rand. Like, calm down. Okay. Marjorie Taylor Greene is comparing mandatory vaccines and mask wearing to what Jews went through during the Holocaust, which she apparently thinks was a public health measure, I guess. And she's, you know, double, tripled down saying she's not sorry. But she doesn't have any committee assignments. She doesn't really have anything better to do because of other crazy shit she's already done. So I'm not sure this is how she's using her time. Congratulations, Marge. You got attention.
Got attention for being the dumbest bitch in town.
Congratulations, Marge. We now all know that you, everything that you think is bad, you compare it to the only other thing that you are aware of is bad, which is the Holocaust.
We can't even tell how bad she really thinks the Holocaust is.
Right. She said that she wouldn't take down a statue. Was that her or was that Lobo? Lauren Boebert.
Which one?
She said she wouldn't take down statues of Hitler. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
okay.
MTG.
Caroline Singh. Yeah. Caroline Singh it was. So I guess maybe she likes wearing masks and wants to get a vaccine because Hitler is, I don't know. My brain hurts and I can't give her the power to hurt my brain like this. She's not important enough.
No, but also it's like, stop calling it a gold star. It was a yellow star. I mean, it's like, if you're going to be wrong, at least get, I don't know. I guess it's not even worth getting some part of it right because she's just so wrong.
Yeah, yeah. And I just, have you learned any other history? Do you know about anything else that ever happened that you could maybe compare this thing you don't like to?
I'm sure she could give us a whole earful on what she thinks Manifest Destiny was about.
That's true. She probably knows like a upsetting amount about like Civil War battles.
Right. Like, so all the wrong ones. The three that they didn't lose.
Right, exactly. She knows like too much about. She's like the person who starts talking about the Civil War if you're like in drinks with a group of friends and you're like, "Whoa."
Yeah.
I'm going to go home. I don't want to be around this person. Okay, here is another one that fits into this larger point that I'm making. A Wyoming state senator who plans to mount a primary challenge to Liz Cheney compared himself to Romeo from Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet when news broke last week that Anthony Bouchard, that's the name of the candidate, impregnated a 14-year-old girl when he was 18. By the way, this took place in Florida. The age of consent in Florida both then and now is 18. So what Bouchard did was statutory rape. Not statutory Romeo. Why would you compare yourself to Romeo in this context?
Girl, when he looks in the mirror, he sees Romeo. That is called reverse body dysmorphia.
Also, has he read a book since 10th grade?
Or watched one episode of Law and Order?
Yeah. I mean, but here's the thing. Like, did he even read to the end of Romeo and Juliet? Because Romeo killed himself.
It's true.
Like, they both did. And it's a tragedy. So it's very sad.
We should send this dumb fuck some hemlock and see if he knows what to do with it.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe he'll make a boutonniere. And finally, talking thumb Rick Santorum was let go from CNN after he commented to a conservative youth group that white Europeans, quote, birthed America, quote, from nothing. And that, well, yes, he gave it to us that the Native Americans were there, but basically Native Americans had no influence in American culture. I got to hand it to Native American organizers and activists. They did what women and gay people could not do, which was get
Rick
Santorum
Rick
fired. And I consider that to be a very important cultural contribution.
I could not agree more. When I watched this clip first come out, it's like, you just wonder, you're like, that just came out of your mouth. And it wasn't like, didn't trigger anything. He wasn't like, oh shit, I didn't mean that the way it came out. He was just like, mm-hmm. He just doubled down with the head nod.
Yep. And then he went on Fox News to talk about how he was being silenced. Fox News, the cable TV channel with the largest audience in America. That's not called being silenced. That's called weaponized whining, Rick. That's just... But here's the thing. Like, I think that, you know, when I heard the quote originally, which I think it was from back at the end of April that the quote first surfaced, I thought, did Rick Santorum pay attention to American history after he was past the age when they like shelter us from American history? You know, like when you're in elementary school,
right,
you don't learn about all the like stolen labor, stolen land, rape, murder, genocide. They kind of save that until we're like maybe more
10th grade.
Right? Like I think middle schoolers are ready for this. Like we gotta be like honest with our kids. But that was like a third grader's understand. It's like he read a third grade picture book and was like, yep. And then the white people came over and there was nothing here.
But not even, because if you had only gotten as far as the third grade picture book, you'd at least think that they brought you Thanksgiving. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Like, maize.
Like, maize, right? I mean, it's like there is no, like the rudimentary book actually, I think, gives Native Americans more credit than Rick Santorum.
Yeah, I also think that it's kind of funny that he would use the word birthed and then the words from nothing. Like the implication of the word birthed is that something has a mother. like it came from something. Like, it's just, I don't know. I don't want
to. He's driven you to the point of diagramming sentences.
I know. I'm fucking close reading a failed Pennsylvania senator that, again, looks like a thumb in a toupee. And that's not, I'm not making fun of his appearance because he's ugly. He's ugly because I don't like him. You know, like that.
Yes, that is completely fair.
Like that Mean Girls quote, you know, it's because I don't like him. So anyway, all of these four stories, you know, this Wyoming state senator, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Wyoming's non-Romeo, and Rick Santorum kind of drove home this idea that I've had for a while, which is that current Republicans do not read. They do not read books after high school. Like, I bet a lot of them are like Andrew Yang-style Catcher in the Rye is my favorite book type people.
Oh, I think that's a good call. I think that's a good call.
It's like the longest thing they've read since 10th grade is a Cheesecake Factory menu.
Like, what have you read that wasn't at one point assigned reading?
Exactly. Or what's your favorite book that's from the last 5 years that was published in the last 5 years? I think that's a good question.
They would all just be like, my book, because for some reason, most of them get fucking book deals.
Who's buying them? Who's reading them? I don't think that they get read.
No, they're just propaganda for the bookshelf for the room raider.
Yeah, I mean, completely, 100%. Ugh, but so many trees. Why do they all have to die for, like, fucking Andrew Cuomo's book? We have to move on, but first I want to toast somebody. I mean, I think that we kind of, like, imply a toast to her just by living our lives. Because she just represents unmitigated excellence.
At every turn, literally. It,
yes. Simone Biles, arguably the greatest living American athlete, possibly the greatest gymnast of all time. On Saturday, she became the first woman in history to perform and successfully land the Yurchenko double pike in competition. It is a move that's considered so dangerous that no woman has ever even attempted it. Okay, so the vault is named after a Russian gymnast named Natalia Yurchenko. And it's the reason the vault is named after her is because of the approach, not right. The actual, like, flipping.
Right.
What did you make of this vault?
I had to have watched it 15 times, 20 times. I couldn't get enough. Also, one, her costume that she was wearing, her outfit was very, very good. And at first I was watching her tumble, then I'd pay attention to her uniform, then I'd watch her flip again. I mean, the thing I always think about when I watch gymnasts do that is, like, how do you get the courage to do the first one, right? To, like, to do the first one where, like, you don't know how it feels, you don't have the muscle memory for it. But she made my day. I love watching women fly and then land on two feet.
Yeah, she's an absolute phenom and just like an American hero. And I got to say, my feelings about the Olympics are mixed, but my feelings about Simone Biles are very simple. And that is, she's awesome and I support her in everything she does.
I agree with you entirely.
All right, let's take a quick break. But when we come back, we have an interview you're not going to want to miss. And welcome back. Alyssa, I have a question for you.
Yes, Erin.
Are you one of those people that, like, writes your period down in your calendar?
Occasionally.
Oh, okay. So it's just completely useless. Like, you just don't
It's try. Kind of useless. I started writing it down because I'm supposed to take Prozac 5 days before it starts. So that's the only thing that's ever gotten me to take pen to paper on this topic.
Interesting. I know people that are really, really religious about it, that, like, track it every month. I was not one of those people. I was like, I don't know. It happens like the 26th-ish. I don't know. So the reason we're talking about this, in addition to the fact that we do talk about this kind of thing anyway, because this is just how we are, in case it wasn't already in your calendars, listeners, tomorrow, May 28th, is Menstrual Hygiene Day, which is a day that aims to change the negative social norms around menstrual hygiene. So periods are normal.
We all get them.
You wouldn't know it. What a concept. So we're really excited today to talk to Molly Hayward, who is the founder and chief branding officer of Cora, a women's wellness company that is working to change the feminine hygiene industry and bring an end to period poverty. Molly, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so great to be here.
We're really excited to talk about this. So firstly, for those who aren't familiar, can you tell us a little bit about what period poverty is?
Period poverty is essentially a person's inability to access or afford adequate menstrual care. So it could be sort of whatever product or means they want to manage their period, but for whatever reason, they're not able to, again, afford or access. And I would say access sort of using that term mostly geographically, the period care they need. And this is a problem that exists the world over. I first became aware of it in developing countries, but in fact, it's also a major issue here in the US and in many developed countries as well.
But Molly, more specifically, how did you first learn about the issue and how did it influence you to create Cora?
Yeah, so I was traveling in Kenya several years ago. I was with a nonprofit organization that was focused on girls' education and women's health. And so I was seeing all of these girls, you know, being the first in their families to go to school, all of this kind of amazing investment being made within the community to make sure that they could attend school. So making sure they had uniforms and books and tuition. And this organization was even helping to build school buildings. And I got to know a lot of the girls. And one day, one of them told me that she stayed home during the week of her period every month because she couldn't access or afford, you know, a period pad. And that just totally floored me. And, you know, it was really this moment where I realized, like, this is this common experience among all menstruating humans around the globe, and yet our experiences of that experience can be so vastly different just depending on our circumstances and situations. And it felt incredibly unjust to me that her life would be negatively impacted by this just biological fact. And so, you know, that was really the impetus for creating Cora. I knew that there could also be a better way for women in my own society to have healthier products that are more sustainable and have just a more modern brand experience and tie that back to giving to girls in need. So that's what we've done. Mm-hmm.
So I read that you called the feminine care industry, and I'm using your quote, fucked. What's fucked about the industry, and what aspects of the feminine care industry are you most hoping to change? Like, how can it get unfucked?
I'm really glad this is a podcast where we can say fucked. yeah, it is frankly fucked. You know, when I got back to the US after that fateful trip, I really started to dig into the industry to understand my own experience of my period. And I started to look at, you know, not just the products themselves, but the ads, the marketing, the way that we talk about this experience among each other. And, you know, the thing that stood out to me first and foremost was that it was really hard to find out what was in these products. So, you know, I was putting a tampon in my body for a week, a month, and, you know, was going to do that for the rest of my life. But it was not clear to me what was in that product. And when I started digging deeper, I learned that, you know, many of those products were made with synthetics or non-organic cotton, which is one of the dirtiest crops in the world. And I was just horrified, you know, not to mention kind of what I would call the antiquated notions of womanhood that a lot of brands were kind of still using as a way to, like, you know, hook girls into their brands. You know, this industry has really run on a kind of like hook them while they're young philosophy. And a lot of that's based in fear, like, you know, touting kind of all the ways that they'll make sure that no one ever knows you have a period, and sort of this like erasure of this experience. And so, you know, the thing that, you know, that I want to see changed more than anything in this industry is really the mindset about this experience. I think it's so damaging to have an aspect of your body that you hate or loathe, or that you like really just struggle through. And everybody's body is different, and it can be incredibly painful and difficult for some people, and there's no denying that. And that is really real. But I think it's that perception, that societal sort of stigma that I would like to see altered by the way that I think newer brands and organizations are starting to actually approach things.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you were just talking, it made me realize that, you know, a lot of men, a lot of people who don't menstruate and never have menstruated, have a complete lack of understanding of the way the reproductive system works in a person with a uterus. Like,
totally.
And some of them are making laws. Some of them are making laws about what we're supposed to be doing with those things. So
totally.
I think that, like, what you're saying about, like, removing the stigma could maybe help men be less stupid about the way that, like, the female reproductive system, how the uterus works, like all of those things, which I think we see evidence of that ignorance in so many ways. So thank you for doing that.
Oh, sure. I mean, it's baby steps here, but, you know, we're trying. We're doing what we can.
Now, Molly, you know, I have always suffered with my periods. Several years ago, a friend told me about Cora. I decided to try it, and I was so blown away by how my body felt during my period. I mean, it was literally such an extreme difference from what I had been using to how I felt when I used your products that, full disclosure, I went and invested in your company because I wanted everybody to be able to try your products. So you mentioned tampons, and explain this a little bit more because I'm not the expert you are. Tampons, not regulated by the FDA, correct?
Tampons are regulated by the FDA because they go inside your body, so they're considered a medical device. Pads are much more loosely regulated because they don't go in your body. But what I would say is that regulation that happens, you know, it's what I would say, I'd say it's been pretty lax, you know, in terms of the materials you could use to make that product. You know, those are not materials. Historically used materials are not ones that I would recommend putting in anyone's body.
What is something, aside from that, that the average person doesn't know about the tampon and feminine hygiene care industry that they absolutely should?
Ooh, that's such a good question. I think it is that ingredients are very loosely regulated. And, you know, I think that the biggest assumption among women menstruators who we talk to who are kind of like learning about natural or organic options for the first time is like, well, I had no idea. And I just assumed that someone was regulating these and looking out for me and making sure that the ingredients were, you know, were safe and healthy for me. And as we know, that's it. In a lot of industries, that's not true at all. Yeah, this is one of those ones where you really have to, I think, read the ingredients, educate yourself, and you know, make your own conscious decisions.
You know, it's funny to hear about this largely unregulated medical device that women and people who menstruate put in their bodies once a month for a very long time, and people are freaking out about the COVID vaccine.
Yeah, totally.
Let's freak out about the right things, please. Let's refocus our freaking out. Okay,
totally.
So the tampons and feminine care industry is obsessed with the idea of discretion and that our periods are something to be ashamed of and hidden. So how do we break the stigma? Let's say that this is just like one average listener who's like, I'm going to do my part to break the stigma. What should that person do?
Well, you know, I think it's to me, it's very much to each their own. I think what we've seen happening over the last few years is like this level of just like pride and openness. I think certainly on social media and kind of out in the real world, but like captured by the media in important ways and then sort of highlighted. Like I'm thinking about Kiran Gandhi running the London Marathon without, you know, without kind of like free bleeding and like having blood on her pants when she ran over the finish line and like not giving a fuck. One of the earliest, you know, posts that I think like kind of blew up the internet a little bit was Ruby Carr posting, you know, a picture of like a period stain on her sweatpants and being really like, this is very real. Like I bleed every month and, you know, like we all do. And I'm like putting this front and center. And so I think like there's kind of at that level of visibility, there are things happening that I think are really inspiring. I don't think every person has to like walk around with blood on their pants, nor like do most of us want to. But I think it's almost like having a willingness to talk about it and not just in negative terms. I think like the old way was sort of like, this was this thing that you got to like commiserate with your girlfriends about. And like, it was just this thing. And yet, like, I think what is coming through, especially just with this broad movement that's happening where there's just more and more acceptance of this experience as very like normal and natural, is like a permission to talk about it in a new way and a permission to just be really open with it, even with your partners, like, you know, especially male partners, where I think before it was like, I'm going to hide this from my male partner. Like, they're not going to know when I'm bleeding. Like, you know, I might be like a wreck or I might be a total bitch, but like, I'm not, you know, we're not going to talk about it. And like, now, like the big thing is like period sex. We just launched a reusable disc, which is similar to a cup, but you can wear it while you're having sex. And so, you know, I think it's just like opening up more and more doors for conversation where conversation was not happening before, or the conversation was overall negative.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the first time in Crooked Media history that a podcast has had a period sex conversation.
Yeah.
I think that we made some history just now. Yeah, I think, you know, another thing that I think about when it comes to like just the, you know, having a uterus that bleeds sometimes, it's kind of fucking metal, right?
Yeah.
Like,
totally.
It's kind of metal. Like it's like pain and then it's like blood and then it's like, and then you get crabby and you get aggressive sometimes or you get tired. It's just, I think it's more metal than people give it credit for. It's not like
it's intense.
It's like, yeah, it's not a pastel
feel. Oh my God, it's hardcore. Like, I have a friend who was like, we bleed and don't die. Like, where else in like, that's like mythological.
Uh-huh. We bleed a shocking amount from a organ that went during non-pregnancy is the size of a lime.
Totally.
Uterus, totally. What are you doing?
Who are you? I don't know if you guys had it or where in the world you are right now, but I'm on the West Coast and it was the super blood moon last night.
Yeah.
And it was like visible at like where I am at like 4:15 in the morning. So I set an alarm because my husband and I are kind of geeks. And, you know, I got up and like, you know, opened the window to look out. And like, I swear to God, like my uterus was like aching just looking at it. And, you know, I think it's real. And yeah, it's definitely... It's definitely no joke. Like, you know, having these parts, it's intense.
It's an intense mystery, definitely. Mm. And at least the full moon's in Sagittarius now and not Scorpio anymore, you know? That's a whole other conversation for a different time. Molly, thank you so much for joining us and talking about this with us. We really appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been awesome.
Yep. Have a great one.
You too.
Save on quality sofas, sectionals, top brand mattresses, and more during Haverty's President's Day sale. Find the style of furniture you've been looking for at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
And welcome back. Really excited for our conversation on today's personal political. Alyssa, are you excited about this?
I'm pretty excited.
I think it's going to be a really good one because we've all got stories about this topic and we've all got opinions about this. I mean, we have opinions about everything collectively, but I think this one is going to be especially good. Let's bring in the other two women who will be joining us for the conversation. First, she is a comedian and writer, and she has recently wrote for Pause with Sam J, which you can watch Fridays or streaming on HBO Max. Megan Gailey, welcome back.
Hi, thank you so much. And I'm so excited about the show, and I really, really hope people watch it.
Is it like an ongoing thing or
there's six episodes. They call it a late night show. So it's a late night show. There's no set, no audience. Okay. So it took out all the bad things about late night, but there's really, really honest, good, funny interviews, point of views. Sam is truly like probably one of the, if not the funniest comedian working right now. So, it's just my parents will go, we have a lot to learn. So that's good. That's good. that's a good review of the first episode.
Oh, you penetrated the Indiana market. That's fantastic.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You have to.
You got it. I mean, that's a mark that something has actually made a splash. And also, like, you talk about late night TV, like, sets. When I was a kid, I literally thought that Jay Leno was like sitting in front of a beautiful panorama
of
Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I felt so cheated when I learned the truth.
Yeah. No pretty views here.
No. And
no,
you know,
skylines.
No. And like the Daily Show offices, you know, it was implied that like Jon Stewart was sitting in front of like Manhattan. But in reality, it's like on 10th Avenue. And for a while across the street, there was an exhibitionist who would flash them when they were doing their writers' meetings. So
put him in the background.
I know. That would actually be kind of like transgressive. I think it'd be
pretty
cool.
That's New York. Let's get
the Big Apple. And then you should show that guy and then show an apartment open house next door where 30 people show up with like giant file folders in order to apply for a crappy apartment in Chelsea or in Hell's Kitchen.
Hell's Kitchen.
Up next, she is an author and she has written the forthcoming book, You Sound Like a White Girl, The Case for Rejecting Assimilation. Julissa Arce, welcome back.
Thank you. You can see I'm getting way more comfortable being on the show today. I'm wearing glasses. I'm not wearing any lipstick. I'm like, oh, it's the ladies from Hysteria. I can show up in my Selena t-shirt and be all
yes.
There.
Oh, so now can I see this? Can I see the Selena t-shirt? We have to have this in the photo. That is incredible. How many thumbs up and signs of like approval do you get when you take that one out into the world?
You know, not as many as I would hope. But that's, I think, because my old neighborhood, I don't know that a lot of people recognized her.
Sure.
In my new neighborhood, I'm excited to take out this baby out into the world in my new neighborhood where people will absolutely tell me bitty bitty bomb bomb as I'm walking by. And I will show me.
I love judging a neighborhood whether they know Selena's face or not. I think that should go on Zillow.
Absolutely go on Zillow. Yes, I agree.
Oh, yeah. Especially in Los Angeles. If you're in a neighborhood where people do not recognize Selena, like you're in a
Don't move there. The food's gonna be bad. You're not gonna like him.
Oh, right. Yeah. food's going to be bad. There's going to be like long lines for one coffee shop that's across the street from another coffee shop that has the same coffee, but inexplicably short lines because it's a neighborhood of people who just like to stand in line because they like to do popular things instead of deciding for themselves what they like.
Getting us today, aren't you?
Sounds familiar.
I have had it with parts of the East Side, Megan. I have had it. Silver Lake can eat my butt.
Eat her butt. Honestly, Silver Lake would be honored to eat your butt, Erin.
Thank you so much.
I don't know, you might have people lined up.
I know. And then I'll open my butt across the street and see if they come over.
Oh, man. I don't know. It depends on if you have really good olive oil cake. Like, they have it proof. I don't know what that means, but it was gross. Okay. So today we're going to talk a little bit about dress codes, and this was inspired by an article I saw about a high school in Florida that digitally changed the photos of girls to eliminate their cleavage. So not even cleavage. I'm not talking about like, you know, exotic dancer advertising cleavage or, you know, OnlyFans cleavage. I'm talking like a regular ass girl wearing a regular ass tank top that implies that she has breasts under her tank top. The school decided that for the purposes of modesty, they needed to eliminate that. Because the worst thing, I think, for a young woman is for the world to know that she has breasts. What could be more devastating? What could be more devastating? Alyssa, you and I have talked a little bit about dress code expectations. And, like, you talked about, like, getting blogged about for wearing flats in the White House. Has there ever been another instance in your life when you've gotten in trouble for the clothes you were wearing?
Yes. So when I first went down to Washington, D.C., it all comes down to Washington, by the way. I never got in trouble in New York or Chicago. When I first showed up and I was an intern for Bernie, the job I had was to go from office to office and get signatures on bills that he was co-sponsoring, and they wanted me to bring it over to the Capitol. And then one of the people in the office was like, you can't go to the Capitol. And I'm like, why? And they're like, because you're not wearing a skirt and stockings. And so it's not so much that I got in trouble specifically. No, actually I did, because I didn't have on a skirt or stockings because Bernie didn't give a shit. And I don't even think he knew that that law existed over in the Capitol. But it was up until, it was like the mid-90s. It was like right after, I think it changed right after I was an intern. But for basically the entire time that Congress existed up until the late 90s, women had to wear skirts and pantyhose. And I would like any man to put on one pair of pantyhose in the D.C. summer and tell me it is not a form of torture, because there was nothing I would get, and there'd just be like pools of sweat when I'd get into my car, because I lived so far away. I had to take a subway to a parking garage, and then I drove the rest of the way home. And there would just be like pools of sweat behind my knees. It was so disgusting.
Honestly, what is it about the composition of behind the knee, like tight sweat? It's just like under boob sweat.
It is,
it's like
under
chemically,
boob sweat.
It's chemically the same, and it's just, ugh. Julissa, what has your experience been with like expectations around dress? And have you ever gotten like chastised or shamed because of what you were wearing?
Oh, yeah. I have a story about this. So senior year prom, I like saved all this money to buy this dress. That was like this beautiful dress. It was like a tube top at the top type dress. Mm-hmm. And I have large breasts. Like I don't remember when I didn't have large boobs. And this dress, I guess, over the course of the night, like went a little lower and lower. Not to the point where it was like I was exposed, but definitely to the point where when we took our prom pictures, it was like all chest, like it was like all boobs. And I was so mortified of these pictures. And I don't remember if I like threw them all away or if I still have them. So I don't think I have them anywhere still, but I do know for a fact that I did not give a single person a prom picture, and I forbade my prom date to give anybody a prom picture because I was so mortified and embarrassed about this picture. Because when I did show it to a couple of friends, they all sort of had the same reaction of like, I was kind of trying to get them to tell me oh, it's totally okay. Don't worry about it. But they were like, oh no, that is horrible. Like,
oh no.
You can't see anything but your boobs. And now looking back on it, I'm like, they were just boobs. Like, they're just boobs. And they were my boobs. And like, you're welcome, everybody who would have gotten a picture of my amazing breast. And I just wish that, you know, when I read this New York Times story, I just got so sad because I thought, fuck, man, like, girls are still having to feel shame about their bodies. And they're still like 20, I don't even know how long it's been since I graduated high school. Not quite 20 years, but almost. And 20 years later, people, like, girls are still having to feel shame about their bodies. Their boobs still have to be covered up. And it is ridiculous that as a society, we have not made any progress in how we view women and how we treat women and how we value women and what we value or not value about them. Mm-hmm. And it is truly saddening and maddening. And I was so upset reading that story and thinking, you guys made me have to think again about that prom picture that I had been so upset about. And mm-hmm. I wish I had them so that I could post a throwback picture on Instagram. And I don't know whatever happened to those pictures.
Oh, well, I hope you find them because it seems like it would be an empowering, like, moment of reclamation for you to be like, these are my tits. Live yes. with it. Live
yes,
with
and
it.
And also, I wish I had that body again.
Megan, same question for you. Have you ever gotten, like, policed or in trouble because of what you wear? I know, like, as a performer, what you're wearing is under scrutiny. Has that ever become an issue?
Oh, yeah. It's a constant issue. I have a infamous sort of feud, actually, with a comedian that I opened for 10 years ago. And I had dressed up. It was like a really big show for me. And so I'd worn a dress. I'd worn heels. I'm sort of like the opposite of Alyssa's story. I dressed up for this occasion. And then this man who was twice my age reprimanded me in front of everybody and was like, do not wear that on stage. My fans do not like that. Like, you do, like, women are going to be threatened by you looking this way. Like, female comedians need to be in jeans and t-shirts and sneakers. And that's, like, the only way that female audience members are going to feel comfortable, because if they're dressed up, then all they're going to be thinking about is if they're the guy they're with is looking at that woman in a sexual way.
Whoa.
Ah. It was bad. It was bad. And it's, and so that is something that that I hear perpetuated in this industry a lot. Like, you cannot be overly sexually dressed woman on stage because people are not going to listen to you or think you're funny or this argument of, like, women are going to be mad at you. Mm-hmm. And it's really, I mean, now I dress up. I dress however I want to dress because I'm in a very different place in my career. But it fucked with my head for a while mm-hmm. to be like, oh, I can't present myself in the way that I would like to present myself, in the way I feel funny and beautiful and confident, because mm-hmm. a man who's more successful than me told me that it's not good for my career.
Right. And he was, like, imagining the psychology of women in the audience in a way that's totally inaccurate. I can't speak for every woman. I'm no longer the official spokesperson of women.
This is a man whose closer is to get nude on stage.
Okay.
I'm Googling that now.
Oh, my God. But here's the thing. Like, that's not how I think. When I'm watching a woman perform, I'm not like, is she prettier than me? I'm like, she looks fly. Like, good for her. Yeah. Good for her. And I'm not, like, sitting there thinking that whatever guy I'm with is comparing me to the woman on stage. Because if that's a concern for me, like, fuck that guy.
Yeah, you gotta break up.
Yeah, why am I with this fucking loser who can't, like, watch a woman do something without objectifying her, thinking of her as, like, a total, being distracted by her sexuality? Megan, like, I'm curious, like, there are, like, pretty prominent female comedians now, like, yourself included, but, like, Natasha Leggero kind of leans mm-hmm. against that. Like, Nikki mm-hmm. Glaser, like, will dress, like, really sexy on stage, but, like, sexy in a way that's appealing, like, for, it's not, like, porn sexy.
How she wants
sexy.
To dress. No,
yeah, she just looks
it's
awesome.
Just like, oh, this is my body and I want to look the best way possible. I had an issue when I was doing TV where I had chosen an outfit and I was told that's going to be distracting. That's going to be
What was the outfit?
The outfit was a blazer and shorts that was over a bustier, basically. And I thought I looked so good in it. And the feedback was coming from people that do have my best interests in heart and do care about me professionally. And they were like, we're just worried if you wear, and I have little boobs, okay? Like, that's why I'm like, let me show my little boobs. Like, mm-hmm. No one, they're not going to flop out. Like, it's, I truly feel like I don't have to wear a bra. Like, I feel blessed in this way that I can just have them flapping in the wind, you know? And they were like, you need to wear something higher cut. Because we worry that it's just going to be about your outfit and not what you're saying. And mm-hmm. it sucks because it's like you feel tied to it. It's something I think about every single night when I get dressed to go do a show. I thought about it last night. I was just in New York. It takes me so much time to pack because I have to think, what am I going to wear on stage and how is it going to affect how I'm viewed and what my performance is? And I lean into it and I talk about my clothes a lot. Like if I'm dressed crazy fun, I'm going to make fun of myself. I'm going to mention it to just sort of like break the ice of like, I know that I, you know, look like a woman who teaches ceramics to divorced people. But it's like, I shouldn't even really necessarily have to address what I'm wearing every time I go to do my job. But in some ways, it's kind of been beaten into me that if I'm wearing a certain thing, you gotta open it up or the audience is gonna not. I mean, it's tough. I don't know. I'm glad I have good style and a husband who has good taste because if I just had shitty clothes, I think I would have stopped doing comedy a long time ago.
I mean, I can't blame you. I like to dress up too. I want to kind of talk about the other side of that, which is like, I guess as the pandemic has been winding down, we've seen all these news stories about women who are like, I'm going to keep wearing my mask. I kind of like that men don't get to comment on my face anymore. And I've also seen people who normally would dress up starting to wear comfy clothes and been like, whoa, it's so nice that I'm wearing comfy clothes and men just leave me the fuck alone. So Alyssa,
yeah.
As maybe the foremost expert on comfy clothes that I know, and as somebody who's had to be in public, like what's different in the way that you are treated when you're wearing just like whatever makes you comfortable versus when you're wearing something that is like expected by a dress code?
So here's the thing about this one. It's really changed how I live my life, to be quite honest, is that when I always had to abide a dress code, whether formal or informal, I actually didn't act as confidently as I do when I'm wearing clothes that I feel comfortable in. You know, like when I'm sitting at the head of the table in the Situation Room and my fucking Spanx start to roll down. I don't feel awesome. I don't feel in mm-hmm. control. I'm just like, I can feel it. And it actually happened once. And I thought of the Wanda Sykes stand-up where she calls her stomach Ethel and how Ethel fights with the Spanx and the Spanx start to roll down. And I was like, fucking Ethel, man, why are you doing that? And so here we are like in these serious meetings and I'm thinking about how like my Spanx are rolling down. So now I have just vowed that I am never working any place ever again where I cannot dress as myself, which is, look, guys, you can make linen that is not body skimming look very, very flattering and professional. And so this is what I seek out now. There are like four brands that I buy my clothes from. And when I put it all together, like, look, I do wear a lot of sweatpants and t-shirts, but when I put my like linen, you know, combination Ina Garten meets Stevie Nicks, I'm like, ooh, I am invincible. And I think that people respond to me better because I feel good. And I'm just like, mm-hmm. I fucking sit down and I'm not worried that like, you know, my pantyhose are sticking out the back of my skirt. It's, you know, also just unrelated. I once had a skirt split on me that I, when I was with President Obama, and they had to literally, the doctor had to stitch me up with pins to get me back together, which wouldn't have happened if I were wearing linen.
All I kept saying the whole time was, it's not because it was too tight. It's not because it was too tight.
No, there are some
fabrics. The
doctor's
like, okay. Just suck it in and we're going to pin you back together.
I diagnosed this skirt with not having enough stretch. How about that, Alyssa? Julissa, you brought this up when we were prepping for the episode, but your new book, your forthcoming book, is about assimilation, like fighting against assimilation. So I'm curious your thoughts on how dress codes police assimilation and try to enforce assimilation on women in particular.
It really all comes down to, it's not about the clothes that we're wearing, right? It's about meeting some sort of standard that someone else has set for us. And who made these standards? Who knows, right? Probably a white straight male made these standards that we all are trying to abide by. And when we continue to do that, then we can never change it, right? And Megan brought up another point that made me think, we're talking about how like you have little boobs and they can flap around and like it's fine. And like absolutely, when a woman is bigger and curvier, like I can't do that with my boobs, right? Because people will absolutely judge me. I cannot walk out of my house without a bra on. Like I just can't, because people will stare at me. People will look at me, and sure, I can be like, fuck it, and still do it. But I will still feel some type of way when people are looking at me like that, right? And so, mm-hmm. I had talked about how like women of color, we are policed then in a different way, in a bigger way, more scrutinized, right? I was talking about sort of Black girls and Black women and how they aren't policed just for the clothes that they wear. It's also how they wear their hair, right? Like at some mm-hmm. schools, they can wear braids or extensions. And yet at other schools, they can wear their hair natural. So it's like, what the fuck are they supposed to do, mm-hmm. right? What's the message that we're sending? And the message that we're sending is constantly that no matter the situation, it's not about the clothes or the hair, it's about control. And it's about somebody else exerting control over our bodies, over our image, to meet some standard that none of us had a say in making. Like we didn't have any decision-making ability in coming up with the standards, with this dress codes or any of that, right? And so I think it's important just to kind of like highlight that, you know, when it comes to women of color and particularly Black women, like Black girls getting expelled from school at I think at some point I read that Black students are suspended and expelled from school at a rate more than three times greater than white students. And some of that comes from dress code violations. So it is dumb to think that because someone isn't wearing something, now they can't go to school, so now they can't learn. You know, it's like so counterintuitive to like everything. So, to me, it is sort of about understanding that somebody else has set the standard for us and we have to reject that standard and make spaces where we can be ourselves. So, you know, I love what Alyssa said about not working at a place where she can't dress however she wants to dress. And I sort of feel the same way now too. You know, I remember when I worked at Goldman, there was a colleague of mine that was very thin and would often wear blouses that I couldn't wear, because if I wore those same blouses, my chest would show, right? My chest would be more prominent. She also once wore fishnets, and I was like, that's pretty bold, you know? let me try it. And I mean, I had to go to the bathroom and take them off because the looks I was getting, I wanted to cry and like just go home and never go back because I was so embarrassed. And I'm like, what the hell? You know, she got to wear them and maybe people were looking, and maybe that was just in my head, you know, maybe the voices in my head were louder than the voices in her head, or maybe she didn't have any voices in her. I mean, good for her. But I do feel like there's often, if there's a double standard between men and women, then there is like an exponential double standard for women of color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This happened at my high school all the time. You would see, and because like in Indiana, it's like this, everyone's shopping at the same stores or whatever. And so a white girl would be in something, not get in trouble. A black girl would be in something, get in trouble. And it would be, they have different body types, or she's black and we're going to target her. And that's an easier person for us to reprimand than this white girl. 100%.
You also, like, you often hear people who are like doling out these punishments wrap it up in words like distracting. Like, yeah. It's distracting. Distracting to whom? Mm-hmm. Like, why don't you learn to not be distracted by a woman's knees mm-hmm. or shoulders? Like, what do you mean distracting? That's so, it's so gross.
I mean, I was, you know, it's like, talk about this, like, this being distracted. When I was looking up at this pictures from this yearbook story that were photoshopped, and then there's like this picture of these two boys in Speedos. Yeah, and I'm right. Like, I'm sorry. That's not
weird.
Like, how is that not distracting? But a girl just wearing, what was even more distracting was the awful Photoshop job they did. It's like, I mean, I know nothing of Photoshopping, and I'm pretty sure I could have done a better job mm-hmm. Photoshopping.
Yeah, it was like MS Paint level. Like, someone clicked
there was like a plaid swatch.
Yeah.
It looks like they uploaded it to Insta Stories and like found something to put over it and then downloaded it and then like used that picture.
Well, and it's, I'm not saying every parent of a teenager is doing a 100% amazing job, but it's like, these are minors and their parents saw them leave the house. Like, why does this one woman who runs, I was very upset it was a woman who runs the yearbook too, think that like she knows better than this person who decided to wear this, or the parents of this person that thought that like there was a mom on it being like, my daughter I thought looked good, like I don't have any problem with it, and I'm her mother.
Yeah,
I agree with all of that, and I agree with that, and I will say that I was definitely that girl that would pack a different outfit in my backpack to change into, because my dad was so incredibly strict about what I could or could not wear, which mm-hmm. you know, I mean, that's a whole nother topic of conversation.
Yeah, we can get into like the concept of age appropriate clothing too, because it impacts like younger girls, but it also impacts like grown women. You know, I think three of us are in our 30s, one of us is in their 40s, and it's a weird thing that I've noticed. I think we all look young, but I've seen people who are in their late 30s basically shamed away from wearing like trendy clothes because that's like dressing too young. Alyssa, having worked in Washington as much as you have, did you notice like an age policing thing happening with the way that women dress as well?
Yeah, I mean, there's a certain dowdiness expected over a certain age. That's like, you know, where you just go to, what is it, Jill? What is that shop? I can't remember.
I'm thinking of Chico's.
Chico's, it's like, you know, Tahari Outlet, and you know, just make sure your blazer's boxy and your skirt's kind of loose. And yes, Jill Stewart. Carolyn reminds me, and you know, it is. There's a certain youthfulness that was not at the time really appreciated, like bold colors and, you know, sparkle and all that kind of stuff. Though I do think it's changing based at least in part on what we see on the floor of the United States Senate from time to time.
Mm-hmm. Well, Gwen Moore is a great example of a person who is in Congress, has been in Congress for a really long time, and she is having a fucking great time with how she dresses. Nancy Pelosi, another person who's like, fuck it, I'm wearing a full head-to-toe pink. Head-to-toe pink.
Matching mask and all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Pink
AOC
shoes.
Showing up with big old hoop earrings and red lipstick. Also, yes.
Yeah, it's like it breaks the expectations that like, it almost seems like when girls are teenagers, they're supposed to be like kind of wrapped in this little chrysalis. And then when they're of a marriageable age, they take it all out and they can wear sort of short skirts and like revealing tops for like 6 years. And then when they get married, they have to wrap it up again and disappear.
Mm-mm. No. I said I wanted to look hot at my wedding.
I have a confession to make and an apology to my mom, because I just realized how I have policed my mom and the way and what she wears, because I think that she's almost 70 and she shouldn't be wearing, you know, a low cut shirt. And I don't know where that comes from, but in the course of this conversation, I have realized that I have been doing that to my own mom, and I should not do that. My mom should, I mean, she's fucking my mom, and she's has lived a whole life, and she can wear whatever the hell she wants. And yes. I will no longer tell my mom, Mom,
see?
Please cover up.
When we know better, we do better.
Yeah.
That's right.
I do think there's something with aging, too, where there's this trade-off of like, oh, if I dress more conservatively and not as flamboyant and cover up more, I'm going to get more professional respect too. Mm-hmm. And those should not go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. You should mm-hmm. get professional respect based on the merits of your work, which I know that sounds really simple, but it's just not the case most of the time.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time, I think that there's a way to like, I think it's also kind of about this intangible ability to pull something off. Like, there are people, like, I was just thinking about, like, Kyrsten Sinema, and maybe it's just because I don't like her, but whenever she's, like, she just dresses in a way that I find to be annoying, given, like, her personality. It's, like, it contributes to my thinking she's annoying, and I've been trying to, like, untangle whether that's me having, like, internalized misogyny. What do you think, Alyssa?
No, so I fully agree with you on this, and that's who I was sort of referencing before. It's that this is my point about I have to be aware of the places I'm walking into. And there are some places that are very conservative. Like Julissa, when you were at Goldman Sachs, you know, there is a way that kind of everybody mostly dresses. And it is a more conservative sort of environment. And so with Kyrsten Sinema, I mean, I just don't, I think that the floor of the U.S. Senate is you can wear bold colors and you can express yourself. I'm not sure a flouncy skirt is what I would put on to go to the floor of the U.S. Senate. Like, I do think that there is a respect mm-hmm. imbued in that body that is, you know, like, just keep it a little bit more. Like, she could have worn a red dress, you know. She doesn't have to play down entirely, like, who she is. But I think, like, crinoline in Congress, I would say it's a risk.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting question.
But, you know, at some point, wearing pants as a woman was a risk.
Yeah,
right.
You know? So yeah. It's sort of like, I don't know. It's like things don't change until they do. And then there's like a new standard, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I stand by her right to have bad style. You know, like, I think that's just what it's like. Listen, it's not the style I like, but girl, that's the style you like. And I stand by you not knowing what clothes look good.
Right.
Yeah, at the quote, I may not agree with what you say, but I'll fight to the death your right to say it. That's how I feel about her damn skirts.
Yeah. That's fair.
I think that's totally fair. And, you know, here we're discussing, like, whether or not – there's a difference between, like photoshopping out somebody's, like, clavicle versus being – but versus reflecting on a choice to wear something that could be distracting, not because it shows off your body, but just because the style itself is a little bit like, whoa. Nobody's advocating for that to not be allowed on the floor of Congress. Like, I think, Megan, you raise a really important point. Like, nobody's saying, like, Kyrsten Sinema should be fined, like, a non-mask wearing, you know, red stater or something like that. But, you know, I do think that there's, like, there has to be there's like some point at which maybe we can, like, people can dress how they want to dress, but also have a little bit of understanding of what they're walking into. Like, for example, Julissa, you are like you and Megan both had like beautiful weddings that had a dress code at the wedding. And like, if somebody had shown up to the wedding wearing like, you know, a propeller top and a Snuggie, you might have been a little annoyed.
Right? I mean, the only thing that people were not allowed to wear at my wedding, women in particular, was a white anything. Like, just please do not wear a white dress to my wedding. Mm-hmm. Like, that was the only thing I really asked. But yeah, I mean, you're right. like I did, it was a formal wedding and I wanted people to wear formal long dresses and for men to wear suits or tux. Yeah, that's true.
I had no dress code and people showed up in a cowboy hat, a bolo tie. There was someone in a white blazer. And the reality was, like, people were coming up to me being like, they look crazy. And I'm like, I look the best here, so I don't really give a fuck what anybody else is wearing. You know? I'm in Vera. Is anyone else in Vera? No. Okay, then case closed.
Caso cerrado.
Okay. Finally, let me just, we have to wrap this conversation up. But before we go, let's do this thought exercise. Like, if there could be like a positive dress code that's like, I encourage people to dress like X versus a negative one, which was like, don't show your shoulders off. What is like one thing that you wish more people would take into consideration when they were getting dressed? And I'll start to just kind of set an example. This is a practical tip. Make sure that whatever shoes you're wearing, you're comfortable walking a mile in them, like a literal mile in them. Shoe anxiety is real. I think I am positive that Nancy Pelosi could probably run a 5K in the heels that she wears. But, you know, if I'm going anywhere, there is almost nothing worse than being caught in shoes that cannot hang. And it has nothing to do necessarily with like how high they are, how sexy they are. Some of my more comfortable shoes are like super high heels. And some of my least comfortable shoes are flats. It's just like very important for shoe comfort to be a factor when you're getting dressed. That is my number one wardrobe thing. Also, like if it snows and you're caught with like open toe shoes, if you live in a place where it could snow.
What?
That happened to me one time. Oh my God.
Very Chicago? Quick. I'm guessing
yes,
Chicago. Yeah.
Very quick tangent. I went to a Christmas party with my boyfriend at the time and I wore open toe shoes and I stayed with him. And it snowed overnight, and the next morning I had to be carried to a cab because I had no other shoes. So just, you know, take shoes into consideration. Alyssa, what is your, like, number one dress code, like, positive recommendation?
Positive recommendation would be do your hair however you want to do it. Do it in a way that you don't have to fuss with it all the time, because the one thing that I do find distracting is when people come, male or female, whatever, and they have their hair and they're constantly like having to touch it to put it wherever it has to go. I find it very distracting and like, it makes me tense. So I think that you should just do your hair in a way that it's just like there and it's sort of mm-hmm. like a non-issue and you're not like constantly doing, people can't see what I'm doing, but it's like constantly yeah. this like touching and fixing and twirling it around your finger. It's just not, that's something I actually find kind of,
we're all fixing our hair yeah. now, as Alyssa's saying that we're all.
See? It's like, you know, if your bangs have to constantly be put to the side, I'll put a clip in them. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good tip too. Less fussiness when it comes
Less
to
fussiness.
Hair. Julissa, what's your number one positive dress code tip?
Wear a comfortable bra.
Good idea.
You know, because I definitely have had my share of really sexy, beautiful bras that are like digging into my rib or like the middle of my chest. And maybe they're just wearing the right size. So maybe that's the tip. Make sure you're wearing a bra
that
the
fits
right
you.
Size.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
There
and it also like, it's not a like, don't distract people with your boobs thing. It's like wearing a bra that doesn't fit fucking sucks. Don't,
yes.
You don't want to do it. Megan, what is your positive dress code tip?
I would say get things tailored. I stylists say it all the time. Like if you are between sizes, you don't need to force yourself into something. You can go up and then have it cropped. Like you can have things hemmed, taken in, get things to fit your body because clothes are not sold to fit every single person's.
Save on quality sofas, sectionals, top brand mattresses, and more during Haverty's President's Day sale. Find the style of furniture you've been looking for at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Moto Casino. America's
social casino. Body. They're made to fit like one person's body, and that's not the body most of us have. So pick what you like and then have it fitted to work for you.
That is a great tip. Okay. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, Sanity Corner. And welcome back to Hysteria, a podcast where straight men have been silenced since 2018. Congratulations, guys. We're coming up on 3 years of silencing straight men. Who knows when the straight men will be allowed to talk. This is the part of the show where we talk about things that have kind of brought us some joy in a time of confusion, because all times are times of confusion. It's Sanity Corner. Alyssa, I'm going to have you go first this week. What is keeping you sane?
You guys, I love Mayor of Easttown so much that I almost can't handle it. Like, I hoarded episodes so that I could watch like two back to back. And it was so, like, I just can't get enough. I needed this show. Like, ever since Succession ended, I'm like, what am I going to watch? And then Mayor came along, and it's just been a joy and a pleasure. And I felt so relaxed after my episodes were over last night. I was like, God, that was great. So relaxed watching missing women be found.
Very tense.
But she found the women.
No, I know. She did. I mean, it's, I was, Mayor was up there in my sanity corner. Do you have any wild theories, Alyssa? Any insights?
I won't speculate, because the last time I did this, I forget what show it was. Pfeiffer and I tried to break down what an ending to an episode was going to be.
The Undoing, maybe?
It was The Undoing. It was The Undoing. Yeah. And I was just totally wrong. I was like, it's the kid, it's Hugh Grant, and he's setting the kid up. Now, it was Hugh Grant, but he wasn't setting his son up. No, but Mare, I just, well, that's the thing that I love about the show, is that at the end of every episode, you're like, okay, it could be one of three people. Like, it's not clear. I love when they just leave, and I'm going to go back and watch from the beginning, because another one of my friends said that if you go back, you'll see clues that you were missing before.
I saw Akila tweeting.
Yes,
about
it was
that.
Akila.
And I'm like, let us know the clues. It's so called, guys, Mayor of Easttown.
Yeah, Mayor of Easttown. It's fantastic. Also, as somebody who has married into a Pennsylvania family, the Pennsylvania accents in Mayor of Easttown are some of the best and most authentic I've ever heard.
I agree with that, as someone who's also married someone from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Eastern PA has a bananas, absolutely bananas accent. And I've seen people on Twitter saying, like, why do they have Southern accents? Guys, that
is not Southern.
A Southern accent. That is an Eastern Pennsylvania accent.
Water.
You guys, I also married someone from Pennsylvania. This is wild.
What? It's a big state.
It's Pennsylvania. A big state, and I guess they got good men there.
Yeah, it's the husband state. It's where you can find a.
Did anybody's husband go to Penn State?
No.
No, okay, but no. Josh's parents both
However,
went there.
However, my mug, Penn State Forum.
Okay.
Oh, full circle.
This could be a Mayor of Easttown clue. Jaleesa knows the murderer.
Oh, man.
I didn't even know the show.
Jaleesa, what is keeping you sane this week?
Watermelon margaritas.
Oh,
yes.
I am so glad that it is watermelon season and that I can have it with my tajine, that I can make margaritas, that I can make smoothies with it. I mean, watermelons are my favorite thing in the world, my favorite fruit. And particularly watermelon margaritas are keeping me sane this week when there are so many insane things going on. And they're very easy to make. You just put a bunch of watermelon and a little bit of which ones are the green ones, lime or lemons?
Limes.
Limes. Okay. So you put some limes, just a little bit of lime, and you blend it all together. Then you use a colander, put it into a glass, and then you put a shot of tequila and a shot of that orange liqueur. What is it
Grand
called?
Grand Marnier.
Cointreau. Either one.
Either one of those two will work. And then you just stir it a little bit, put some ice cubes in it. It is – oh, and then you put a little bit of tajin at the top.
That's good.
And they are delicious, and they are keeping me incredibly sane this entire week. Thank you, God, for inventing watermelons. and Mexicans for inventing tequila. And also, no, it was not 818 tequila. I will not be drinking Kendall Jenner tequila. And also, Kendall Jenner, I am sorry because – she tweeted at me that I was wrong about the gift bags. Those were not her gift bags. She did not give gift bags to make guacamole with tajin in them. So thank you, Kendall Jenner, for not giving people tajin to make guacamole because that would be wrong.
You know, it's big of you to admit that Kendall Jenner was right about something amidst all—
I mean, she's right about the
one thing.
The bags, but like, you know, we still need to talk about her tequila. So
it's
not all that, hug.
You know, after I was just thinking about, like, remember that Pepsi ad where she was like,
oh, yeah.
Handing?
Oh, God.
She just needs to think about beverages.
Can this woman learn? Can she learn? Don't.
Like, you know, make your tequila. That's fine. Like, I'm not mad about your tequila. I am mad about you putting your hair in trencitas, braids, you know, putting a sombrero, wearing those earrings. Like, you don't need, you can just show up as your white girl self to sell your tequila. Like, you don't need to try to dress as the culture to, like, do it. But we're talking sanity. So back to just have a watermelon margarita.
I bet when it gets, like, ungodly hot here, just blending that shit up and making it a slush. That's
so good.
So good. Okay. I'm going to go now. So my sanity corner is actually another podcast, and this isn't like an advertisement or anything like that. It's just a podcast that I have really been loving. It's called The Turning, and it's a podcast about Mother Teresa, and they interview a lot of people that used to be a member of her order of nuns, and holy shit, things were crazy. It really I grew up Catholic with an idea of who Mother Teresa was and what her order of nuns did. And, you know, I never really thought very much about the ways in which the people that were members
this
of the order
good.
might have been subjected to kind of bad treatment. It is like serialized podcasts or documentary style podcasts are real hit or miss for me, because it's usually like news or like smart people talking about the news or like on the media. And that's pretty much it. But this has hooked me. It's really well done. I love the host does a great job putting herself into this story in a way that isn't like distracting. And the interviews are great. It's edited together really amazingly well. I know this is kind of like a nerdy take, but I don't really like when podcasts are like overproduced and there's like too many music cues and stuff. Like a lot of true crime podcasts do that. It's like, I don't need like dastardly to like sneak around music being played over this description of like this person. So yeah, it's just really well done top to bottom. The subject matter is great. The way it's put together is great. They do a great job hosting it. And it's like a woman forward podcast. So if you're into that sort of thing, definitely recommend. I think there's three episodes out and I already can't wait for the fourth one. So that's my sanity corner this week. Megan, what is keeping you sane this week?
Okay, coming live from my sports corner. It is like one of the best times of the year for sports. The NBA playoffs are happening and it's been very fun. The Knicks are in. The Clippers are falling apart. There's a lot of drama happening. The Nets, like the big three, are playing together for the first time in like a long, long time because they've all been injured. But the WNBA just kicked off their 25th anniversary season and Sabrina Ionescu is putting on truly a clinic. Like, she was a rookie last year, got hurt, is back, and she is going to revolutionize. She is a star. The WNBA is on SportsCenter with the NBA playoffs where it belongs. It's also the NHL playoffs, which I'm not like a huge regular season hockey person, but NHL playoffs are the best postseason of any of the sports. And my hometown Indy 500 is this weekend. And I mean, just if you find yourself in black and white on Saturday, you can say you celebrated it. You don't need to go above and beyond. You don't need to do anything special. It's a very loud, long race. But maybe check in. Definitely there's some hunks in IndyCar racing. So Maybe some hunks to peruse.
Okay, Megan, your take on sports right now was literally borderline Stefan from SNL.
It's got everything.
We've got everything.
We've got everything you need.
You know, it's funny. The hockey thing has become an issue in our house because the Penguins are playing what is turning out to be a very interesting series against the New York Islanders. But here's the thing. I have a very hard time with hockey. I love basketball. I love watching like playoff baseball. I love it when like all the sports are going at once because it's like it's like a mini March Madness with less like less gambling. And like I like find myself, despite myself, getting caught up in Pens games. Like if I'm like walking past the TV, I'm like, I don't like hockey. But wait a minute.
I love hockey. A shootout? That is exciting. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Or a sudden death overtime.
Yeah.
And they're exhausted. They've already played three periods. Hockey games are long. Uh-huh. Oh my God. Yeah. It's you know, I'm not like a hockey fan normally. The whiteness of the ice is like upsetting to me. It's like, no, sports need green. But yeah, it's been like it's an exciting time in sports for sure. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I might also add the MLS season is going on. And I finally got to go back to an LAFC game, Go Black and Gold. And they are amazing. And if you live in Los Angeles or anywhere where there's an MLS team, you should go support your local soccer team because the MLS is kind of awesome.
Oh, yeah. And in Portland and Seattle specifically, I know that those games sell out and they're crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, and then also the National Women's Soccer League is going to have an LA team within the next couple
Angel
of
City.
Years. Yeah, Angel City, which is going to be so cool. People are going to get really excited for that. I'm excited.
And if you're an LAFC season ticket holder, you can get you can place a reservation for Angel City season ticket.
Awesome.
Oh, that's
so, there you go.
That's a great tip, Julissa. And that's all the time we have for the show this week. Thank you to Megan and Julissa for joining for this great conversation about dress codes and staying sane. Alyssa, thank you for being my ride or die per usual. Thank you to Molly Hayward for joining us for a talk about alleviating period poverty and unfucking the menstrual care industry. And thanks to you, the listeners. There will be more hysteria next week. I am from another planet, this nation, fuck Janet. But these girls gotta fan it, 1-2-K email and scan it. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Rustin is our producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan.
Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer, and Brian Semmel is our associate producer. Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer, and our editor is Sarah Gibalaska and the folks at Chapter 4. Our digital team is Nara Melkonian, Mia Kelman, and Matt DeGroot. Thank you to Juliet Beckstrand for production support every week.
Save on quality sofas, sectionals, top brand mattresses, and more during Haverty's President's Day sale. Find the style of furniture you've been looking for at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.